From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Tens of thousands of Marylanders of all ages in all parts of the state have a drug problem. Every time they use, they're in danger of overdosing. The number of deaths in Maryland related to heroin tripled between 2010 and 2015. Yesterday, we heard a young woman's story of heroin addiction and recovery using methadone. Today, we hear from Dr. Kenneth Stoller, director of the Johns Hopkins Broadway Center for Addiction, which provides outpatient drug treatment services. He explains how medication-assisted treatment works and why increased access would be a public health benefit.
For every dollar that we spend on substance use disorder treatment, many times more dollars are actually saved by society.
Can medication-assisted treatment stop the opioid epidemic? It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. 5 out of 6 deaths due to drugs or alcohol intoxication in Maryland last year were related to opioids. And in just the first 6 months of this year, preliminary data from the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene finds that 566 people across the state died from heroin use. Yesterday, we heard from Christina, 24 years old, from Howard County, who uses methadone to treat substance abuse disorder. She started using drugs at age 13. After graduating from high school, she switched from prescription pain pills to heroin. Christina went through rehab and 12-step programs, but neither helped her stay off drugs. Then she decided to try methadone. Here's part of her story of recovery.
I know there are a lot of people out there that do still use and, you know, maybe take too much methadone and give it a bad name. But for me, I mean, the evidence is in my life. Like, I graduated from the University of Maryland. I have a full-time job. I, you know, work to help other people who are going through this. My family says they have their daughter back. My life is so different. I'm not spending every day trying to figure out what I have to do to get money to get high, what I have to steal and who I have to steal it from. Like, now when I go through struggles, my mind doesn't say heroin like it used to. It says, I need to talk to my mom. I need to call my mom. I need to call my friends. I need to relax and read or think about this. Or like, it just doesn't go there anymore.
Today, we continue our look at medication-assisted treatment, how it works, how effective it is, and how accessible it is in Maryland. Dr. Kenneth Stoller is Assistant Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences for the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He directs Johns Hopkins Broadway Center for Addiction, which provides outpatient drug treatment services such as opioid detox, counseling, and case management. And he's with me in the studio. Welcome to On the Record.
Good morning, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
When we talk about treating opioid addiction with medication, well, what kind of medications are we talking about?
Well, first of all, the medications are used as a component of treatment. And the medications that we use specifically for opioid use disorder involve two different types of medications. One type are called agonists, and they activate the same areas of the brain that are activated by the drugs that people were using. But they do it in such a way that the person doesn't feel a higher euphoria from those medications. And examples of those are methadone and buprenorphine. The other type of medication are opioid blockers, and the generic name for that medication is naltrexone, and that comes either as a daily pill or it comes as a monthly injection by the brand name of Vivitrol.
Describe the process of getting methadone. Patients have to go every day at first?
The first thing is that the person needs to either pick up the phone and make the call or talk to somebody about needing treatment.
So who do they call?
Well, they can call in Baltimore City. There's a group called Behavioral Health Systems Baltimore. They have a hotline that can be called. They can talk to their primary care provider or their psychiatrist. Or they, if they have insurance, they can look in the back of their card and see what number to call for behavioral health. So there's all sorts of ways that they might be able to do that. The next thing then is to make an appointment. And when they first are seen, they're going to get an evaluation to determine which, if any, of the medications would be most appropriate for them. And then once they're started on the medication, it can take a little bit of time to get stabilized. And during that time, they get to know their counselors and others that they're working with in terms of that.
And so that requires daily visits for most of these medications?
Right. So for methadone, the only way to get that is through these specialized opioid treatment programs, or OTPs. And that is very highly controlled and determined through regulation. When a person first starts in methadone treatment, they have to come every day for their medication. But then over time, if they're doing well, they earn take-home privileges, such that by the end of the first year, they might only have to come to the program once per week for their medication. By the second year, they might only have to come once every 2 weeks. And by the third year, it could be as little as once every month.
And how do you decide which type of medication is appropriate?
So when a person comes into treatment, they receive a very comprehensive evaluation. We really try to get to know the person well, all of their needs, their medical, their psychiatric issues, what they're going through socially, what their environment of care is like. And then we determine what's driving the addiction and what's kept it going for so long. We take a history that includes what have they tried so far, what's worked and what hasn't worked over the years. And typically people are coming to us with many years of substance use disorder. And then based on that and a conversation with the person about their preferences, we come to a conclusion about what to try at that point in time. Not everybody is accepting of medications, and there are some people for whom medications aren't necessarily a choice that we recommend at the present time. But currently, in the setting of some of the additives that are put into drugs like heroin or some of the pills that are actually counterfeit and contain drugs like fentanyl, which are much more powerful than heroin and can cause instant overdose if somebody takes it, the use of these medications are very, very important because they're a safeguard against overdose and potentially fatal overdose as well.
How are they a safeguard against overdose?
Well, so these medications, and so right now I'm going to speak primarily about methadone and buprenorphine, those agonist medications. They do a number of different things. At relatively low doses, they can decrease somebody's withdrawal. So when somebody stops using opioids, and by opioids I mean prescription pain relievers or heroin, primarily here in Baltimore, when somebody stops using it, they get extremely sick, physically and very mentally distressed as well, and go into withdrawal. And these medications can decrease that withdrawal. At somewhat higher doses, as we go up and adjust these medications after we start them, craving starts to go away. So the person isn't bothered by having cravings and thoughts of using that come throughout the day and can distract them from their regular activities of life. Then finally, once we get to the most effective doses, if the person was to use, let's say, heroin or some oxycodone, they actually wouldn't feel the euphoria from it because of the way that these medications cross-react. So we call that a blocking dose. And that's very important because if somebody does have a flare of their substance use disorder and uses, it's important they don't get reinforced by having that high.
I want to pick up on that because I think a lot of people have the perception that folks who go on one of these medications are exchanging one high for another, that they're not really clean if they're using some kind of substitute.
Right. And we get that a lot, not only from family members of our patients, even medical providers, but also the patients themselves. So we really have a lot of education to do. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so thrilled to be here today. If you walk, Sheila, into my program today and you talk with some patients who are on buprenorphine or methadone, you absolutely would not know it. It does not affect the way they look or the way they feel. It doesn't affect their ability to drive a car or to work. They look like all of us. And it's important to note that. There are people who are on these medications who also have other substance use disorders. They might be using sedatives like Valium or Xanax or alcohol. And those are all things that we treat as well through other means. But if they were to be using those on top of the methadone or buprenorphine, they would get a sort of a high effect. But these medications in themselves do not cause that. Some people have criticized these medications. I'm calling it a crutch. And I've actually learned a bit to embrace that term when I'm talking
really?
To somebody. Yes. And what I tell them is, and often this is family members that come in and are upset that we have their family member on one of these medications. And I ask them, if you broke your leg, is it better to use a crutch so you can get out, get to work, do your shopping, and take care of your business? Or is it better to sit in your couch all day for 6 to 8 weeks until that bone heals? And that's really how I see these medications, is it really allows people to do the more important work of their recovery, which is establishing a foundation for recovery, learn how to cope with life without using, get back to work or go to get their college degree, maybe get more involved in religious or spiritual activities. So really building a very strong life in recovery. And these medications allow them to put behind their daily cycles of craving and use to be able to do that work.
But let me pursue the metaphor just a bit. A crutch is something we think of using for a finite time. We think of using for, in the case of a broken bone, maybe just weeks. It sounds as if these medications might be much longer term for people fighting addiction.
Yes, that's true. What we know is that the relapse rate for drug use is very high for people that come off these medications in as little as 1 year. And for some people, they might need to be on the medications for many years or even the rest of their lives or until science comes up with something else that helps them. Using that metaphor, you might think of somebody who needs a rod in their bone, and that might reside in them for the rest of their life. It's something that helps them to continue to function if they have a chronic and severe problem. And that's how I see these sorts of medications.
That's Dr. Kenneth Stoller. He's assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He directs Johns Hopkins Broadway Center for Addiction, which provides outpatient counseling and drug treatment services. Do you have a sense of how many people in Maryland are on medically assisted treatment?
Well, in terms of methadone, we know that rather well because it's highly controlled and there's many requirements in terms of submitting data. So we know that between 27 and 28,000 people are receiving treatment within opioid treatment programs. Now, beyond that, in terms of how many people are getting prescribed buprenorphine through office-based practices, that's not as well known. It seems like there's probably about 50,000 people within the state of Maryland that have some opioid use problem.
How many opioid treatment facilities are there in the state?
There's about 70 different facilities right now across the state. They're mostly clustered within central Maryland, so primarily in the Baltimore metropolitan region and then in the D.C. metro region as well. But they do extend across the state of Maryland. The problem is once we get into the rural areas of Maryland, it really the access really is much more limited, and people might need to travel 2 or even 3 hours to get to the closest opioid treatment program. In terms of the other medication that we were just talking about, buprenorphine and naltrexone, those medications can be prescribed through physicians. And in the case of buprenorphine, they can be prescribed by an office-based physician if the physician goes to an 8-hour approved training and then fills out a form and sends it in to the federal government, to SAMHSA. The problem is that there are a lot of physicians that really are not comfortable with treating this disorder or treating the patients that have this disorder. And so we really need, as a addiction field and as a provider of addiction medicine, we need to help physicians feel more comfortable with dealing with this population and with prescribing these medications. And that's something that I've really been focusing on very much in my career at Johns Hopkins.
How many doctors in Maryland do treat this population?
The physicians that are targeted are primarily the primary care physicians. And we've looked at this on a national level as well as on a local level here in Maryland. And what we've determined is that only about half of the physicians that have gotten the waivers, and the waivers have been received by a very small minority of the total physicians in Maryland, but only half actually use those waivers. And those who are using those waivers are providing this treatment to very few patients. So what I did in my community around Johns Hopkins is reach out to those primary care physicians and psychiatrists and talk to them about what's keeping them from providing these life-saving medications. And what they tell me is that basically that there are worries and fears, that they worry about their ability to be able to start these medications on patients, this logistics. They also worry about not being fully trained on how to do an assessment. And I think most importantly, they worry about what happens if I can't stabilize this person? What happens if they continue to use drugs? Where do I send them for counseling? And what if they don't want to go to counseling? So I've created a model that integrates care between my program and these other physicians in a sort of hub and spoke model where our program starts the medication, stabilizes the person on the medication, and then will allow the person to then get prescriptions through these physicians over time as long as they're doing well. They continue in counseling with us, and we're monitoring them for flares of their disorder. And if they have a flare and start using, then we bring the medication back into the center where we can deliver it in a much more controlled manner. And that's really worked well in terms of convincing other physicians to start using this medication and for those who were using it to use it for more patients.
Could you see more patients? I mean, are you at capacity?
About 86% of Maryland opioid treatment programs are near their capacity. We can see more patients at our program. There is a workforce problem, and we would love to see more people motivated to enter the treatment field as professionals, as counselors or therapists, social workers, psychologists, and for sure physicians. And then, of course, funding is always an issue. So we need to be funded adequately to open new treatment programs, as well as to be able to pay our staff salaries that are competitive with other fields.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break now. When we come back, we'll look at how accessible and how effective it is to treat drug addiction with medication. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. The latest state statistics about deaths related to use of heroin and other opioids like pain pills give no indication that Maryland's overdose epidemic is being tamed. Many people who use drugs are searching for a way out of substance abuse. This morning, we're discussing medication-assisted treatment, medications like methadone, for opioid addiction. I'm speaking with Dr. Kenneth Stoller, who directs Johns Hopkins Broadway Center for Addiction, which provides outpatient drug treatment services such as opioid detox and case management. If someone decides they want to get help, is medically-assisted treatment the norm?
If somebody comes in for the first time, then I would say typically they're not offered medically assisted treatment. But it really depends how long they've been seen and how severe their disorder is. Nowadays, with the danger that is inherent in using drugs, especially heroin, I think that medication-assisted treatments are really a safeguard right now as well, because there's a decreased ability to overdose if somebody is on those medications as opposed to if somebody is completely drug-free. So somebody who's interested in treatments nowadays, and if they have a severe and chronic form of the disorder, I'd say it's really important that wherever they go that they do offer medications, whether it's buprenorphine, methadone, or naltrexone.
This kind of treatment, medication for addiction, is it expensive, and does insurance tend to cover it?
We're very fortunate, again, here in Maryland. We've always been a very forward state in terms of our policies. So all three of these medications are reimbursable within Maryland Medicaid, and it's Medicaid patients that are the vast majority of my patients that I'm treating here in inner city Baltimore. We also do need to continue to work on making sure that private insurers are paying for this medication, as well as other insurers like the U.S. military insurance. And there have been many great inroads in terms of that. But when I say that we're lucky here in Maryland, I know that because there are still 16 states across the country that will not pay for treatment that is provided within an opioid treatment program, which is primarily methadone, despite there being so many deaths from this disorder.
What's the typical cost of prescription treatment if it's covered by Medicaid?
A week of basic treatment at an opioid treatment program, and we'll start with methadone, is about $80. And so that averages out to a little over $4,000 per year. If that opioid treatment program is using buprenorphine, that adds another $4,000 or so, because the medication itself per year costs about $4,000 for a person on an average dose. For somebody that's receiving buprenorphine through an office-based practitioner, you have that $4,000 plus the expense of seeing the physician. And then if there's any other additional services such as counseling, that gets added on. The fact is, it's a really good value, because people in medication-assisted treatment are much more likely to receive care for their ongoing psychiatric and medical illnesses. And there is a lot of co-occurring psychiatric and medical problems in this population. If they're on medication-assisted treatment, they're much more likely to get those sorts of treatments.
That's Dr. Kenneth Stoller, director of the Johns Hopkins Broadway Center for Addiction, which provides outpatient drug treatment services in Baltimore. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. How effective is medically assisted drug treatment compared to abstinence?
Research on abstinence-based detoxification is not very promising, does not show promising results, in that what we know is about 90% of people who are detoxified in an inpatient unit who leave treatment will relapse within a year, and actually over 50% of them relapse within the week. The problem now is that with fentanyl in these drugs, in heroin, and some of the pills, that relapse can be deadly. So we're in this odd situation where we could be admitting people to inpatient units or to drug-free residential units and think that we're doing somebody some good, that we're helping them with their disorder, but we actually could be causing harm. So really, each person needs to be evaluated by somebody who is very experienced in doing evaluations and with people with addictions to really determine what's best. And especially for those who have been coming in and out of treatment that does not include these medications, I think we really need to push those people to consider using these medications. You know, this is a treatable disorder. And ultimately, you know, that's where I'm coming from in terms of my own attitude, is that there is so much hope in the treatment of individuals with substance use disorders. And that's why I love to be talking in these sorts of settings, to get word out there to the people that are suffering from this disorder that there is treatment and that treatment works.
Do you have the impression that there are users of illicit drugs who have the idea that of getting treatment, but they're dissuaded by a long wait to get into treatment, to have the initial consultation or to continue the counseling that they need?
I do think so. I think that there's a lot of barriers, things that keep people from entering treatment. One thing is the stigma that's associated with the disease itself, and then the stigma that's associated with these particular treatments. But then there's other barriers involving payment. People might be underinsured. The treatment program might not be close to them. And maybe the person isn't on a bus line, and it could be as simple as that. The lack of identification of the problem is another barrier. So physicians who might not be asking people if they have a problem. And I think that's a particular problem in our older population. Our addicted population has been for quite a few years getting older and older. And physicians sometimes don't think that people who are older are at risk for substance use disorders, but they really are. And so I think everybody needs to be screened on a regular basis, too.
Thank you for this conversation. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Dr. Kenneth Stoller is Assistant Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He's Director of the Johns Hopkins Broadway Center for Addiction. Yesterday, we heard from a young woman from Howard County who has been on medically assisted treatment for heroin addiction for more than 2 years. Both interviews are available at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Also at the On the Record page, Maryland's Crisis Hotline, 1-800-422-0009. Again, 1-800-422-0009. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you've been listening to On the Record. Come back tomorrow.